Music feeds my soul. Roots. The places and the people, the ideas that resonate with us, where we've come from, where we are known, where we know we belong. I'm thinking of three different types of roots. First of all, geographical roots. I arrived in Saskatchewan in my mid-20s, and this image I present to you of a young woman standing in the middle of an open prairie, absolutely surrounded by 360 degrees of horizon, and above her this endless bowl of blue sky. It was my first time there, but I had roots there. Both my parents had been born in Saskatchewan, and so there was a connection to that ground and that sky and that horizon. It was part of the family story, sort of in the bones and cells of my being, my psyche. The prairie landscape is one of my family's roots. And those roots are entwined with all the people to whom prairie is home. And so it is to those people whom the sea is home, or the river, or the mountain, or the desert. Ancestral roots. My daughters and I went to Nenana, Alaska when they were 8 and 10. Nenana is a Tocotili word that means the meeting place of rivers. Nenana is almost in the geographical center of Alaska and the home to many red-headed coghills, which is our maternal ancestral line. So my red-headed daughter was walking down the main street, which is about a block and a half long in Nenana, Alaska, and everyone she met knew who she was. They knew she was a coghill. And she came home to me afterwards and she said, "Mom, I love this place. Everyone knows who I am." Theological roots. When I walked into the Unitarian Church of Vancouver in the middle of a Sunday service in my 20s, I was struck by three things. The balance between head and heart, compassion, of the minister speaking. The obvious appreciation of beauty in the architecture of the building, and the thoughtful integration of light between what was inside the building and what was outside, the interior and exterior parts of me. This important balance in our spiritual lives. Now, these things I remembered afterwards, but in the moment, I felt a sudden and unexplained sensation of being home. So having roots means that who and what we are today comes from somewhere, goes back in history, back to its source, the beginnings, and is connected to others, spreading out, spreading down. Although sometimes we may think that we've discovered a new land or a new idea, almost always there have been others who have traveled that same place, asked similar questions, struggled into living those answers. There is then this, for me, this wonderful realization of being directly and specifically connected to a huge community, a wider world that we are now rejoining in. That sense of home experienced at my first Unitarian Sunday service had deep roots in the thoughts and the convictions of people going back 500 years, and in some cases longer. They became my people. our people. I'd like to touch on three of the largest and the deepest roots of this tradition. The first was reflected in my perception of the minister in that first service, who happened to be the Reverend Philip Hewitt, who I quoted in an opening reading. This liberal religion had a tradition of respecting both head and heart, both reason and values, left brain, right brain experience. We respect the individual's right to the direct experience of the transcending mystery and wonder of this world, and we also respect each person's right to question their beliefs until they are satisfied, mind and spirit. In this tradition, we are expected to think for ourselves, to question, and then to seek our own answers, and then to live those answers. Sometimes we forget that that is the point of the seeking. Early Unitarians, although they weren't actually called that back in the mid-1500s, they risked their lives to question the established church's interpretations of the Bible and creeds written. One of the earliest controversies was whether or not God was a Trinity or a unity. Why was God divided into three persons, asked Michael Servetus. It was a concept that created a dissonance between his spiritual experience and his critical understanding. Muslims, Jews, Unitarians all spoke at that time of the unity of God. But Christians had said that God was a Trinity, a Father, Son, and Holy Ghost. Michael Servetus, at 20 years old, Spanish, he challenged the religious authorities on this issue, with, for him, the reasonable argument that there was no reference to the Trinity, specifically in the Bible. No reference to the God being these three beings. And for this, to cut a long story or a short story, even shorter, he was burnt at the stake. To live with integrity of mind and spirit, it takes courage. Now, on the humorous side of this, a Unitarian gets into an elevator, and there is a priest who sees her chalice necklace hanging around her neck, and with an impassioned challenge says, "Young lady, I hear that you Unitarians deny the divinity of Jesus." "That's not true," she smiled back. "We don't deny the divinity of anybody." Now, that joke is based partly on divinity of Jesus argument that goes back those 500 years plus, and partly on modern Unitarians who could be said to respect the divinity of all people regardless of their beliefs. So the second root of this tradition of Unitarianism is religious tolerance, which means the freedom to believe what you believe without persecution, and thus the responsibility to defend that right for others as well. Religious toleration and religious freedom was first embraced in 1560 in a country, as I mentioned earlier, where the song that the choir sang came from, Transylvania, which is now part of central Romania. So in Transylvania in 1560, there was a king called Sigismund. And he was an inquisitive person, a good listener, and well-raised by his mother, Queen Isabella. He listened to the arguments of the Catholics and the Protestants. He met with Muslims and Jews and Unitarians. And after carefully considering the different belief systems, decided that he would become a Unitarian. But, and this is, I think, the truly amazing part, because he lived at a time when everyone was expected to believe what the rulers believed, and people killed each other when they found out that somebody didn't believe what they were supposed to believe, King Sigismund said to his people, "I am choosing to be a Unitarian, but I give permission." In fact, he created a law that said, My subjects can believe whatever they choose to believe, and no one can kill another person for believing something different. And that was the first law of toleration, or edict of toleration, in the world, as I know it. Another joke, may I? Alfred asks, "What's a Unitarian?" And Abigail replies, "Someone who believes in life before death." Thank you. I'm glad you laughed. I'm not sure it's a joke, but I think it's more a theological commentary. Of course there's life before death, right? Obvious to us, but not maybe for some conservative religious believers whose views on heaven or the afterlife requires them to focus all of their actions in this life in light of the consequences that will lead to their eternal glory or damnation in the next. This is true of conservative Christians or Jews or Muslims. This world is simply a preparation for the next. So one of the taproots of Unitarian tradition and universalism, I'm going to throw in universalism here because there's a real close connection between the Unitarians and the Universalists. And in the United States right now, or over the last 300-400 years, there's been a coming together of those two traditions because they were so similar. So on one of the taproots of Unitarianism and Universalism is the belief in the goodness of the human being, that inherent worth and dignity of each and every person, and the responsibility that we have to defend, promote, and protect that belief. To get to one of the sources of this idea, we go back to New England and find the Universalist idea of universal salvation. John Murray, a member of the Methodist Church in England, was greatly influenced by the universalist theology of James Riley. He tried to keep his beliefs to himself, but eventually shared his belief in universal salvation and was ejected from the Methodist congregation. This was a terrible time in John Murray's life. He was defeated both professionally and personally, losing his wife and his children, ending up in debtor's prison, and he was ready to do himself in. When a friend suggested that rather than do that, he ought to sail to America and try to start a new life there. So he jumped on a boat that was prevented from docking outside of New York and ended up grounded off the New Jersey coast, where it was to wait for the tides and a strong wind. And as the story goes, Murray went ashore to find provisions and there met a man called James Potter who had been praying for a preacher who could speak to his church about this new crazy idea about the inherent worth and dignity, the inherent goodness of all human beings. Murray, having been disillusioned by his religion and vowed never to preach again, kept putting Potter off. Finally said, okay, if the wind hasn't come by Sunday, I'll come and preach in your church. Thinking that, of course, the wind was going to come up. It couldn't possibly not come up for that many days. Well, you can see the end of the story. The wind stayed still. The seas remained becalmed. And Sunday morning, he fulfilled his obligation, his promise, and went to Potter's church and talked to them about this revolutionary idea that human beings were inherently good. And so the universalist idea of universal salvation, that you are not damned and you're not all going to go to hell because of those sins that somebody at some point had, that you were inherently good, this message seeded itself on the shores of North America. The ideas behind Christian and Universalism is that God is not a wrathful deity, but a loving and a forgiving God, and that Christ's purpose was not to atone for some ancient sins of humanity, but to reveal divine love for humanity. These two are the roots of our tradition of social action. If you think everyone is good, then it's worth supporting them. It is the inescapable consequence of universal salvation. Believing in the goodness of humanity leads us into the world. It's the natural outcome of knowing that every person is equally worthy. This is a belief worth working for and defending. Then we are asking questions such as, okay, so where does racism come from? What are the roots of that? And what can I do to change it? Or where does economic inequality come from? And what do I do to change it? This belief and these values lead us to want to change situations and institutions that harm or degrade the human being. This is what motivated Dorothea Dix, in the early 1800s to fight for those who had no power. Dix was an American teacher and children's author and a committed advocate for the mentally disabled. She was so moved by the conditions in the jails and the poorhouses where the mentally ill were chained to walls and beaten and underfed, she lobbied and then shamed the politicians into funding state hospitals. This is why this week in North Dakota at Standing Rock, thousands of Aboriginal people, white, brown, black people, are standing together to protect the sacred lands of the Standing Rock Sioux tribe. And this is why the Unitarian Universalist Association's president is urging you to join this effort and to bear public witness to the injustices that are happening in North Dakota. And this is why Canadian Unitarians have pledged our commitment to the process of truth and reconciliation with Aboriginal nations by educating ourselves in the history of colonization and the impact of the residential school system. These are some of our roots. Today, they can be seen in the principles and the sources of our tradition. And I invite you to spend a moment this week, even if you've read them 1,000 times, come and spend some time with those words. Imagine where they came from. Imagine where the roots of those ideas started. And imagine the people that lived their lives to bring them forward to our life today, bravely and committed, and sometimes alone and sometimes in communities, standing up for those ideas. Standing up together this morning, us here, on the backs, on the shoulders of those people, makes us a solid community with deep roots and wide branches. May the winds of love blow through our leaves, our loves, our lives today. Now let us sing.